Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is March 9th, 2016. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 17,000. The NASDAQ at 4674. And the S&P at 1989. We are taking listeners' tax questions this evening. Last week, it was so popular. We had probably about 8 phone calls during the hour. And it was a nice pace. So we thought there might be more questions tonight. If you do have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So listeners, tax questions, we want to help you get those tax returns done. We will answer your calls, take your information. Judy Ann is in the studio. She'll ask you to mute the radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you're not comfortable talking on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and she'll bring it into the studio. And we do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. And again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can also send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. So folks, if you have tax questions, you can call and talk live on air or off air, whatever you are more comfortable. But I would suggest if you have questions, call sooner than later, because last week they were coming in quite fast and furious as we went through the show. So 610-758-8810. In between that, I really had not a lot of other information planned to talk about, but I thought one thing that I would like to mention is the scams that are going on with tax season. So I'm going to talk about that for a minute. And if I have to fill in with more information, I am also going to talk about estate and trust income tax reporting as well. So often we think of individuals filing income tax returns and businesses filing tax returns, and many people don't realize that estates and trusts also have income tax filing requirements. And perhaps you're a beneficiary and didn't realize, because it might be the first year you're a beneficiary, you might not realize that there may be tax reporting documents that you need to wait for. So I'm going to talk about income tax filing requirements for estates and trust as we go through the show. If I have time in between questions, if folks don't call in, I'll definitely be talking about it. But until then, I do want to touch on this IRS scams, because I almost feel like we can't talk about it enough, because it's happening more and more often and they are getting more and more sophisticated. So unfortunately, we just have to be so skeptical of anyone asking for any kind of personal information, as you should anyway. But when the con people or the scammers are getting just so sophisticated, it's harder and harder for us to do that, even when we are people of good judgment. Now, I went on the IRS's website and they talked about some of the most recent scams. This one was amazing. W-2 scam targeting payroll and human resource professionals. It's a little scary. Payroll and human resource professionals should be aware of an emerging phishing email scheme that purports to be from company executives and requests personal information on employees. The email contains the actual name of the company chief executive officer. And in this scam, the CEO supposedly sends an email to a company payroll office employee and requests a list of employees and financial and personal information, including social security numbers. So if you are working in HR at companies, if you are working anywhere in a sensitive capacity at a company, you have to be very cautious of unusual requests from emails that appear to be from CEOs or professionals in the organization. Why would they request such personal information? That's your first clue. Sometimes you also want to watch for the obvious grammatical errors that may occur, spaces and commas and misspellings and things like that. Another scam, email phishing and malware schemes. The IRS has seen an approximate 400% surge in phishing and malware incidents so far in the 2016 tax season. So they are seeing it as well. The emails are designed to trick taxpayers into thinking these are official communications from the IRS or others in the tax industry, including tax software companies. So you have to be careful here. Maybe you're someone who buys, you know, off-the-shelf tax software, and you get an email, and it might look official. Be careful. The phishing schemes can ask taxpayers about a wide range of topics. Emails can seek information related to refunds, filing status, confirming personal information, ordering transcripts, and verifying PIN information. Variations of these scams can be seen via text messages. Can you believe it? And the communications are being reported on in every section of the country. When people click on these email links, they're taken to sites designed to imitate an official-looking website, such as IRS.gov. The sites ask for Social Security numbers and other personal information, which should be used to help file false tax returns. The sites also may carry malware, which can infect people's computers and allow criminals to access your files or track your keystrokes to gain information. There's more details about all of this on the IRS's website. Now, the scam that we were most familiar with in our industry is the IRS impersonation telephone scam. And if you're anyone who has not received a phone call, I don't know, you must have a private number or something, because I think for a time period I was getting them every single day, where you get a phone call or a message on your answering machine saying it's the IRS and you are in default, you owe tons and tons of taxes, thousands and thousands, and they're going to take it to the courts. If you don't call them right away, you're going to be in big, big trouble. And of course, I never called them back. But what I have heard from several clients who have called them back because they think they're real, and sometimes the phone number looks like it's from the IRS. So they call back and they find out that the story gets a little bit more convoluted. They'll say, oh, you owe all this money. You've got to pay it right now. How are you going to pay it? Well, run down to the drugstore and buy some debit cards and put the money that you owe on a debit card and someone will come pick it up. I mean, if that doesn't tip you off, then, you know, you've got to be really, really careful. So one thing that you can do is, if you still have a landline and you have an answering machine, is just let all your phone calls go to an answering machine. Because if it is someone who really is trying to get a hold of you, they'll leave a message. And typically you can hear who's leaving a message on your answering machine. I used to be someone who could never not answer my phone. I had to answer my phone. I just hated if I was home letting it go to the answering machine. But then over time I realized no one I know calls on the landline anymore. Everybody I know calls me on my cell phone. So you start to understand that the people who are calling during the day or first thing in the morning, at lunchtime, at dinner time, and at bedtime are the people who are telemarketing or scamming you for IRS. So I will talk a little bit more about that when we come back. If you have questions, tax questions, this whole show, this whole hour is dedicated to listeners' tax questions. You can talk live on air or off air. Just give your question to Judy Ann. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about taxes tonight, and in particular, listeners' tax questions. So if you are someone who's listening and you have a tax question, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can call and talk live on air or off air, whatever is more convenient for you. And if it's off air, you can just give your question to Judy Ann. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio to me. Again, that phone number is 610-758-8810. Let me just wrap up a little bit more about this IRS impersonation telephone scam, because it is so prevalent and so believable. I just want to go over a few other items in this bulletin by the IRS. It says an aggressive and sophisticated phone scam targeting taxpayers, including recent immigrants, has been making the rounds throughout the country. Callers claim to be employees of the IRS, but are not. These con artists can sound convincing when they call. They use fake names and bogus IRS identification badge numbers. They may know a lot about their targets, and they usually alter the caller ID to make it look like the IRS is calling. So when we say they know a lot about their targets, I had a coworker who they said, you were married filing joint. They knew his name, the spouse's name, their address, their filing status. So it almost seemed, you know, somewhat legit, but there's so much information you can find out about any individual these days that it comes across as if they know you. So be careful of that. The victims are told they owe money to the IRS and it must be paid promptly through a preloaded debit card or wire transfer. If the victim refuses to cooperate, they are then threatened with arrest, deportation, or suspension of a business or driver's license. So they try to really scare you and feel very threatening. In many cases, the caller becomes hostile and insulting. Victims may be told they have a refund due instead of owing. So then you're thinking, well, this must be legit because the scammers are only saying you owe money. No, no, no. When they tell you you have a refund, they're going to ask for all your personal information so they could deposit your refund. And that's what you have to be careful. Then they're going to swipe all the money out of your bank account. And again, if the phone isn't answered, the scammers leave an urgent callback request. Note that the IRS will never mail call to demand immediate payment, nor will the agency call about taxes owed without first having mailed you a bill. They will not demand that you pay taxes without giving you the opportunity to question or appeal the amount they say you owe. They will never require you to use a specific payment method for your taxes, such as a prepaid debit card. Won't happen. They will not ask for a credit card or debit card numbers over the phone. And they will not threaten to bring in the local police or other law enforcement groups to have you arrested for not paying. So it seems ridiculous, but they sound so real that it feels true. Okay, we had a caller call in, Rick from Bethlehem. He asked, my wife got a letter in the mail stating that her 2012 or 2013 return was never received and something about a $95 credit. Should he copy and send that in or call to make sure it is from the IRS? Really? Well, that is interesting. I would, Rick, want to see what the letter looks like, there's certain letters that come. They will send you a letter. But to your point, Rick, everything is so scammy now. And if people are not falling prey to the telephone scams, I'm starting to wonder if there's going to be mail scams. So I think it's good to be careful about it. I think your wife should know if she filed a return in 2012 or 2013. You can get a transcript of a tax return to know if you did file or not. I would probably, if you didn't have a tax preparer do the return for you, and it was something that your wife might have sent in herself, and she was expecting a refund. If she didn't get a refund, then maybe they never received the return. So I would just do a little detective work on your own first. Go back and look at the return. Now, what's curious here is maybe you're not recalling if it was 2012 or 2013. The IRS, you know, it's not often they tell us when we have refunds. They quite often will tell us if it looks like we owe. I'm not sure if I've ever seen where there's a refund unless they're correcting something. So be skeptical, but I think you should do your homework. See if your wife has a copy of the return that's in question. Look to see if the letter looks legit and see if there's a 1-800 number. What I have taken to doing sometimes is going on the internet and searching like the IRS website to verify if this is a good number or not. So be a little skeptical, but possibly if their records indicated that there wasn't enough income for her to be required to file, maybe she didn't file because she didn't have enough income, but maybe one of her employers withheld federal withholding, but she was under the income filing requirement. Possibly they might have sent to notice, but I'm also just a little surprised that it's taken this long for them to send that. So be careful, but do a little homework first before you follow up. Just be careful in responding. Thank you for calling in with that. I think it's interesting. I'd be very curious to see that letter myself. Folks, if you have questions, the number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. What some people are getting letters from this year, and more than I have ever seen in my entire career already, I think three people that I've seen have received a letter from the IRS saying that a return has already been filed under their ID number and it's a refund and you need to call the IRS and verify the information because the IRS is trying to be a little bit more proactive and not refunding money automatically. So I don't know what their checks and balance systems are, but what I've seen is where there's a married filing joint couple that has consistently filed married filing joint, and all of a sudden the IRS is getting a return filed for a single person with a refund on it with that same information that had possibly been in the IRS's system as a married filing joint. The IRS isn't refunding those automatically. They're spotting inconsistencies a little bit better maybe than they had in the past. Maybe it's a difference in address. The issue that I'm having trouble with the IRS is they're not very forthcoming in what they share with us. So for example, if I have someone who receives a letter that says your identification has already filed a return, confirm this information, well, how do I know if they've taken my identity or not? I had it where I was talking to the agent and she said, well, only if they suspect that their wallet was stolen do they need to notify the FBI. Well, 5 years ago, the first time this happened to a client of mine, they said, notify the FBI, notify all the credit agencies. And now it seems like the IRS isn't that worried about it. And I'm concerned that these IRS scams are so targeted to just tax refunds that these scammers quite possibly aren't using your personal information to do anything else but get those refunds. So not sure if you're information is being compromised in any other way but for a tax refund. It's very interesting, but I just wish I knew more, and I wish the IRS would share more about what is involved and how are they spotting these. I guess we don't want to let the crooks know how they're spotting them, but as a preparer, I certainly would like to know and know what information's been compromised. Folks, if you have questions, the topic tonight, listeners' tax questions. You can call Talk on Air with me or off air. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
And welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. The phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. If you have questions about income tax preparation, income tax software, questions about certain boxes on those 1099-Rs or taxation for Pennsylvania versus federal, I will mention there is a disparity in how something gets reported on federal versus Pennsylvania. I'll go over that in a minute. So if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You could talk live on air with me or off air. Give your question to Judy Ann and she'll bring it in to me. And email is also available through yourfinancialchoices.com. So one of the issues that I see comes up with differences in federal and state that just popped into my mind, so I just wanted to mention it because I thought of it, and that is 1099-Rs. 1099-Rs have annuity income. If you have a non-qualified annuity, it gets reported on 1099-R, and the taxable portion for federal goes on a line that says annuity income. And for Pennsylvania, that income for a non-qualified annuity, that's the earnings earned in an annuity contract, are taxable in Pennsylvania as interest income. And some people miss that because it's usually a special box you're going to have to check in software to make sure it ends up on the right line. So be careful of that. We have a caller on line one. We have CB. CB, can Hi. You hear me? Hi.
Lori, I mean, my name is CB. Mm-hmm. A few days ago, I received an envelope from the IRS, mm-hmm. and it meant something like this, that for 2014, it said that I had filed a 1040-EZ, which I had not. Mm-hmm. I had filed a 1040, and they wanted me to call a certain number and either confirm that I had filed a 1040-EZ or not. Mm-hmm. I haven't called them yet. The whole packet looked very legit, you know, the way the IRS letters look.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if any of your clients have mentioned this thing to you, similar letters, you know, arriving in their mailbox.
Yes.
I've never seen this before.
I know. And it looks very suspicious, too, because it'll show, like, the ID number. The one I saw showed, like, XXXX or 9999. And
yeah.
The number looked correct, but I was still suspicious and told the client to kind of verify other ways, like go on the IRS website, look for reporting suspicious activity, and they called the number through the IRS website just to make sure. Because
okay.
the IRS won't talk to a tax preparer unless you have a power of attorney. So in this case, the client did the call and went through the process with the IRS agent on the phone. But on another one, I had actually called because through our software, it was flagged that I couldn't electronically file because a return had already been filed. So my client didn't get the letter, but I got an alert. And because I had certain verification information through my software, I had a special phone number that I was given, and I called, and sure enough, someone had already filed a return. So when it's not through software, quite possibly the IRS could be issuing these letters to people. But as to the earlier caller, Rick, I'm afraid of even getting written correspondence from the IRS because if they're, because the phone scams are bad enough. So I would try to see if you can go through maybe a different way just in case. Now, did you say it was for a 2015 filing or a
2014?
2014. That's interesting. I haven't seen that.
I filed a return, married, filing jointly, got a refund, everything was fine. Mm-hmm. And just a week ago, I get a letter, like I said, very legit looking, saying, hey, there was a return filed for 2014 at 1040 easy. How is it even possible? My return was accepted, my refund was processed.
Right.
I mean, is it even possible for the same tax year, two types of returns to be filed for the same couple?
I would not have thought so, because as I said, when I went to file for my client, it got rejected because one had already been filed. So if you filed, did you file your 2014 paper or did you file it electronically?
TurboTax, e-file.
Okay, so there again, I would be surprised, because usually these scammers are doing it electronically. So I'm surprised that it would be accepted. So that would make me more suspicious of that letter as well. But I would go on the IRS's website and look to see if there's another phone number you can call to verify if the letter's legit or not. Because that's the scary part. You call and then they ask you for the personal information and there they got it.
Yes.
Yeah, very scary these days.
Thank you for the advice.
Okay, good luck. Take care.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye. Folks, you want to be extra careful. I mean, I don't know, we got to trust our instincts, trust what people are saying and asking. And typically, I forgot to mention to CB and Rick, who called earlier too, is that quite often the IRS will already have some of that information too, like the Social Security number or the date of birth. But those are the kinds of questions the IRS is going to ask you if you're calling to say that there's a problem with their return, because they have to make sure you're the appropriate person. So there is a lot of personal information that goes back and forth with the IRS. We've got to be very careful. Jeff just handed me a note. Another scam, a check that looks like it's from the IRS will come in the mail along with a letter asking you to deposit the check. And Western Union has a processing fee. The check will bounce and your account will be wiped out. That's a great one to mention too, Jeff, because I kind of forgot about that. You have to be very careful of mail that comes that says cash this check. And it might not just be even the IRS checks. I think I've seen other organizations where you might get a check like that. Sue from Easton called, and she's off air, so let me see if I can ask the question. I might have to answer it after our break, but let me see. She said, she lives in Pennsylvania and owns a rental property in California. I have a property management company that I pay to handle everything. If I make trips out to California, can I still write off some travel expenses? Or does that not count if I don't have an official meeting with the property manager? Well, Sue, I do have some folks who have rental properties and have to travel. Certainly like mileage, if it's a local one and you're going back and forth and taking care of repairs and maintenance and things like that. I think it gets a little bit dicey if you're going out to California Disneyland for a week and you drive by the apartment and wave and you're not doing anything there. So especially when you have a property manager. So I would really want you to document and confirm that it was valid travel expenses. Obviously, there are some legitimate travel expenses when you have an investment property, especially in California, because you may have had a property that you couldn't sell because the market was down and you want to make a good profit on it. So you want to hold it for some time period. So you rent it. So there's certainly valid you know, reasons to go check on your property and make sure everything's going well. But if you're saying you're not even meeting with the property agent, that makes me a property manager. It makes me a little bit question whether the business purpose of your trip or the reason for your trip is business. It has to be the main reason for your trip has to be business related in order to take a deduction for that. So that has to be kind of the main reason you're going out. All right. So just be careful with that. And there's rules on that. And I would suggest maybe like checking that on the IRS's website, travel expenses, business related, and making sure you're doing and documenting everything if you are going to take it as a deduction. Okay, folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 76 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 52. Thursday, sunny, highs around 75. Thursday night, chance of showers, lows around 52. Friday and Saturday, sunny skies each day with highs in the low 60s. The time now is 6:31. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Sue, just a little bit more on the travel expenses. So I quickly look this up, business versus personal. Entirely for business, all travel expenses are deductible. Primarily for business, it says whether a trip is primarily business or personal depends on the facts and circumstances, the amount of time spent on personal activities compared to the amount of time spent on activities directly relating to business is an important factor in determining whether the trip is primarily personal. So if it's primarily for business, traveling by air, you can deduct airfare. Traveling by car, it would be all transportation costs are deductible because it costs no more to drive with four in a car than with one. Hotel room, deduct only the single rate. Meals, deduct the taxpayer's meals only. Other expenses, deduct any business-related expenses at the business destination. If it's primarily for personal reasons, the entire cost of the trip is non-deductible. All right, so for your purposes, I would just look up the facts and circumstances and what would apply to you in those circumstances a little bit more thoroughly. Okay, but from what you said, if you're not meeting with the property manager, it doesn't sound like you might be going there for business. All right, so hope that helps. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. The topic tonight is listeners' tax questions. So if you have tax questions, you're welcome to give us a call, 610-758-8810, or through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. So we talked a little bit about some of the scams that are going on. Always just be careful, take extra precaution, and be a little skeptical of anyone asking for personal information or expecting you to provide personal information as well. I might add as well, since we're talking about scammers and things like that, you know, there was a rash for a period of time, and this comes back from time to time, I'm sure, as well, where older citizens were receiving phone calls, frantic phone calls from their crying grandchildren who were being held by the police and could not be released until they grandparents sent, you know, $10,000, $20,000, whatever it was, to get them out of jail. So I want to caution folks who have you know, elderly parents, aunts, uncles, things like that, or if you're older yourself, be very, very careful of anyone calling on the phone, not just the IRS scammers, but also anyone calling on the phone expecting you to transfer money for any reason, any purpose. do not believe it, hang up, it is not legitimate, never, never transfer money or give personal information for someone to take money over the telephone. It's not good. And how does this happen, and how do they know who to target? Well, one of the things I suspect is that, you know, these con artists or scammers read things like obituaries, and they might see that someone has died. You might be, it'll show ages. It'll say if there was a survivor. It will list children and grandchildren and where they live. So I knew someone who was not taken in by the scam, but had received a phone call saying, and this was shortly after her husband had passed, that it was from her grandson crying and screaming. She couldn't understand him, of course, because that's how this works. Saying he was with the police, and then the police get on the phone. Of course, it's not the police, but they get on the phone and they say, we have your grandson, and he was across the border into Canada, and he's in trouble and needs money to be bailed out, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it almost sounded legit because this was a teenager, lived on the Canadian border. How would someone know this? They call a Pennsylvania resident saying, you know, your grandson who's in New York crossed the border into Canada, is doing no good and got caught and owes all this bail money or whatever. I thought maybe it was someone reading the obituary. So you also just want to be really careful of what you write and share in so many public forums, whether it's posting that you're on vacation on Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat or Instagram. You start putting out that information, you don't know who's trolling those sites and watching and seeing what you're doing and making connections, and then able to take that information and sound very legit when they're calling you to, you know, extort money from you. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can ask questions live on air or off air, whatever is more comfortable for you. But I love talking on air with people. So the phone number is 610-758-8810, and there's still plenty of time. I know it's a lovely, lovely evening, but it is dark now, so most of you might have kind of found your way indoors now, but it's been a lovely evening and I've not been able to enjoy any of the nice weather because I'm working so much. So I hope you all are. But if you do have questions, I am in the thick of it with tax season and happy to help. So let me talk for a little bit about some other kinds of income tax reporting that you may not be as familiar with and should probably have a little bit of knowledge or know this in the back of your mind in case it ever, you know, comes up and could inevitably come up if you are ever to inherit property or assets from someone. So if someone has passed away and while they were alive, they file a tax return and they report things, you know, income that they've received while they're alive, interest, dividends, maybe capital gains, sale of property. They might have a pension, an annuity, social security, things like that. So they're receiving income. When they die, that income may continue. And if that income continues, eventually, after they die, it could either be going into their estate or it could be going to a beneficiary directly. Either way, the executor may have to file an estate income tax return and report that income. And then that income may have some deductions to offset it. But if not, it passes to the beneficiaries and the beneficiaries get a K-1. If it goes to you directly, then you may get the document directly. Okay, we have a caller on line one. I'm going to take that call and then I can finish my discussion in a little bit about estates and trusts. So Linda, can you hear me?
Yes, I'll get on another phone. I have a question regarding the form 1099-R, which we got from Prudential Insurance Company.
Uh-huh.
I guess my question is, they show in two blocks the distribution that we took, which was the RMD for 2015.
Uh-huh.
And they show it taxable.
Right.
And it doesn't say anything about that it's not determined. They're just plain calling it taxable.
Okay.
Now, my question is, this is something that has been in the family for a long, long time. It was originally life insurance. The salesperson came along, said, well, gee, your life insurance isn't making any money. Now they have a thing called an IRA, and we can put your money into mutual funds, which will make you a lot more money.
Okay.
Well, long story short, we did do that. However, we never took any kind of a deduction for any kind of a traditional IRA. And then a few years later, the same sales company came and said, well, you aren't making much money on your IRA. It's invested in mutual funds. You're losing money. We have a new program now called the 7-year annuity. Mm-hmm. And my question to the salesman was, if we have this tax-sheltered investment first in what's called an IRA, we did it long before they ever had a Roth IRA,
mm-hmm.
why would you want us to change it to another tax-deferred, tax-sheltered investment?
Right.
And his answer was, again, performance and
And commission.
Long story short, it was a 7-year annuity which has now reached its term, and we locked it in to take an annual dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that it's called the RMD, but we never took any money out of this since the 70s. I mean, the money that was put in, it was converted from life insurance.
Yeah. Linda, my guess is it's not an IRA, it's just an annuity. When you look at that 1099-R, do you have it in front of you by chance?
I do, and the little box is not checked. It is definitely called an annuity.
It's an annuity. It's not an IRA. So an IRA, folks may have put in deductible deductible amounts. It's all taxable. This is, my guess, a non-qualified annuity. So you took money out of a life insurance policy and bought an annuity, and that wasn't a taxable transaction at the time because you rolled it right into an annuity.
Yes.
And then the earnings come out first unless you annuitize. So, for example, if someone makes a $10,000 investment in an annuity and 20 years later it's went from $10,000 to $15,000, and I take a $5,000 distribution, the taxable amount comes out first. The earnings come out first, so $5,000 comes out. Now, you said this was from the 70s. In the old day, I don't remember the years, original contracts, the basis came out first and the earnings came out second. So I, without knowing more about that particular annuity, my guess is it's a non-qualified annuity, and the earnings are taxable for federal as an annuity, and it's also taxable for Pennsylvania, and it's reported as interest on Pennsylvania's returns.
Okay, because the contract that I have in front of me when we bought it with all our own money. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we've never
right.
never gotten any free money off this deal. It's described as Prudential Premier Series Annuity, IRA.
Well, if that box is not IRA, I'm thinking it might not be an IRA, and maybe that paperwork was incorrect.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah, because it's not marked IRA, or maybe the application might say IRA, but if you look further, if there's a box that's checked non-qualified or a 1035 exchange, then it's probably not IRA. And without seeing the paperwork, that's my guess. That's how I'm reading it.
Yeah.
And then when you say you put all your money in it, what will happen eventually, your investment in the contract will eventually come out tax-free. Now, if you annuitize it, then there may be a portion that will come out that's tax-free. But you want to always ask what your cost basis in the contract is. So, for example,
I have the check, which is the dollar, the exact confirmation. It shows the exact amount.
Yeah, well, that's the amount that's going to come out last.
Oh, geez.
So, sorry, but I think sometimes, and I'm making a comment, is sometimes they want you to quick roll it into something else before you start taking out your basis, because
yeah.
then there's no tax on that. You're just getting back your original amount. But
okay.
I hope that helps, Linda. I've got
it
a couple other calls to take.
Okay,
so thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Helen on line two, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hi,
yes,
how are you?
This is Helen, hi.
How can I help you?
I hope it's a short and sweet call.
Okay.
It turns out that last year I filed my taxes as I usually do, mm-hmm. but they started separating our municipality mm-hmm. taxes, I mean like giving us two W-2s, and they looked kind of identical. I mean, even the municipal thing looked like it was the same thing because they were identical amounts. They split them in half,
right.
and I didn't know. I thought it was just another copy for us.
Right.
So I did not submit that. And I don't know if like $115 or whatever it is that they took from one of the municipalities I worked in. Mm-hmm. It's an international company, so they really are still kind of getting their act together with how they tell us about things. So,
uh-huh.
so I don't know if it's worth amending my taxes, because I hate to admit, I could probably amend last year's and the year before.
Well,
but,
so when you're talking about amending, are you talking about on the local, just at the local
it's
level?
It's the local municipality.
Right.
Like, say, I mean, we're in Bethlehem here. I'm in Bethlehem, but I work in Quakertown.
Right. And, so you filed properly.
Bethlehem was filed twice.
Yeah, so you filed properly for federal and for state, and then on your local, and I'm just going to make up numbers. Let's pretend your wages were $10,000, and on the local part of the W-2, the tax on that might have been $100. So they're going to say
right.
a $50 and $50, and you only filed with the $50.
But they took $100
right.
and then $100 again. They only put half, and they submitted two separate W-2s.
Okay.
It was an ever, you know, it was like one digit difference.
Okay. My guess is that the local, so the proper withholding was done. It was just split between two different, with like, they
well, I told them only a certain amount was withheld, so my taxes were a teeny bit higher than
yeah.
I should have probably paid. I don't know if it's even worth amending. I mean, now I'm wise to it.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things, because we have people working in many different states and many different, you know,
yeah.
and I live in Bethlehem, and Bethlehem's always been a problem with
yeah.
some
well,
of the local taxes.
One of the things that happens is if the employer actually withheld the proper amount, but they,
oh, yes.
but they
indeed, they
paid
did.
It to two different municipalities, as a resident of, if you're in like Bethlehem Township and you're a resident of Bethlehem Township, even if you put down, you know, half the amount, the
mm-hmm.
the tax authorities work it all out.
They'll right.
they'll
okay.
get the right amount of what they're supposed
yeah.
to get.
Well,
so,
actually, that's why I was surprised when I got in one thing, because I said, I paid such and such at the Keystone,
mm-hmm.
you know, who takes the taxes.
Right.
And they had told me last year that I still owed money. I said, what do you mean? I already filed on time. He said, no, but you owe such and such. I said, no, I don't. I paid that. And that's when they let me realize that second page was something that I needed to submit, that I was shy.
Right. And once
amount.
You did that, though, they reconcile
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
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 yeah. That's why you don't have to amend, because they took care of it.
Okay.
So all you're right, good.
Well.
You're good. But yeah, the locals are the biggest headache. They're the biggest
well, for
headache.
Years,
oh.
They never did it. They said you're liable for all of your, you know, local and even state. So we had to keep hundreds of dollars set aside for the eventual time, because they had too many thousands of employees. They were still kind of trying to sort through, and said, here's, you know, we're giving you all the stuff. You just
yeah.
have to make sure you pay it in the end.
Yeah.
You know, we did not take it out up front. So
yeah, they're a nightmare.
At least that's not happening.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
but
well,
anyway,
good luck going forward. Okay, thanks, Helen. Thanks for
you.
Calling. Take care. Have a good night.
Good night.
Okay, bye-bye. Folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I have Albert's question from McCungie when we come back. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Thanks for all the calls tonight, folks. Listeners' tax questions, that was our topic tonight. Albert from A Country Called. He asked, we bought a hybrid. Is there any kind of credit for that anymore? And is there a deduction for taxes paid on new vehicle purchases? Let me answer the easier one, Albert, first. Deduction for taxes paid on a new vehicle. If you itemize deductions on Schedule A, there is a section for taxes. And you can deduct, for example, real estate taxes. And you can also deduct state and local taxes, which we pay like when we're employees and things like that. If you don't have that high of state and local taxes, you can also alternatively take a deduction for general sales tax. And the general sales tax is based on our income and a table provided by the IRS for our geographical location. So they'll take your income based on where we live, apply some tax rate. That's our general sales tax. And to that, we can add additional sales tax paid for certain large items like cars, boats, motorhomes. So, and it doesn't have to be a brand new car. It could be a used car, but we add that sales tax that we paid for our vehicle to the general sales tax. And if that is higher than the state and local income tax that we may have paid, we can take that as a deduction, again, if we itemize Schedule A. So as far as the hybrid, I don't believe they are any longer available. But what there is alternative motor vehicle credit. So the expired provision, the following discussion is included in the event the credit's extended. I'd have to double check to see if this was extended for qualified fuel cell vehicle credit. And so it's a fuel cell, not a hybrid. And frankly, Albert, I look those up. If someone has a car or asks this question, I actually go to the IRS website and look it up every year. Because back when they did give credits for the hybrid, it depended on what car it was and if they had already used up all of the credits available for that particular make and model. So fuel cell vehicles look like there still might be something. Those are Hondas. If that credit was extended. That one I don't know off the top of my head because it's really so rare that I see it. I just don't know that one off the top of my head. So I hope that helped, Albert, and that you get a deduction for your sales tax. We still have a few minutes if folks have questions. I could probably still fill it in a couple calls. 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. I love listeners' questions and I love listeners' calls because you always get something new and different. It's fun. Let me mention about the income taxes for estates or trusts. So if you ever become a beneficiary of an estate, as I was saying, if a decedent had income, they may have the type of income that might continue after they pass away, like interest and dividends, because they would still have those assets. Other things like Social Security, that stops. Pensions sometimes stop. If there's a surviving spouse, sometimes those will continue. But let's use an example of someone leaves no surviving spouse. Typically, those pensions will discontinue unless they had a term certain. So I'm not talking about that kind of income. It's mostly around like investments or maybe they had a house that has to get sold. So quite often we have an estate. Someone hopefully will have a will. If you don't have a will, go make an appointment to get your will done with an attorney and a good attorney who knows estates. Anyway, hopefully there would be a will that will say, here is a person I trust to be my executor. My executor can step in my shoes and manage my accounts and assets that I had in my name alone and pass them out according to my will. Maybe the will says, give all the money to my kids or maybe all to my nieces and nephews. Whatever it might be, the executor has to follow the provisions of the will. And that's for assets that are in the decedent's name alone. Now, a decedent might have had an IRA, a life insurance policy, things like that, where they named a beneficiary. And then the beneficiary, in essence, only needs a death certificate and they can kind of transfer it to themselves. But there still may be something like inheritance tax that might be due on it. So you want to make sure if you are the executor that you are marshaling all the assets and you understand what the assets were that the decedent had, how they're titled, who they're going to, who's responsible for the death taxes, whether it's inheritance tax or estate tax. The will usually will address who is responsible for those taxes. But what I'm talking about is beyond that even, and that is the income taxes that may be in the estate. So if someone died and they had a bunch of stocks and mutual funds, and maybe there was, after they died, $5,000 worth of dividends. And the estate has expenses, of course. Certain expenses are deductible for income tax purposes, things like estate income tax preparation, inheritance tax preparation, income tax preparation, legal fees. So there might have been some estate expenses that helped offset that income. So my example, $5,000 worth of dividends, maybe $3,000 worth of legal fees, accounting fees, what have you, administrative costs, such that there's $2,000 of income still in that estate. If that income gets passed to an individual and they've inherited money, it's like a residuary beneficiary, not specific gifts to individuals, but a percentage of the estate, 100% goes to my niece. Well, that income in the final year when I'm passing out the estate to that niece, that income is going to follow that distribution. And the niece is now going to be responsible for paying or reporting the income and paying the tax on the income. They do that via a K-1, a Schedule K-1. So just like you get a W-2 for wages, a 1099 INT for interest, or DIV for dividends, you're going to get a K-1 from the estate, and it's going to tell you how much income to report. So even though the estate received $5,000 of dividends, you're saying, Lori, the estate got $5,000, but the niece only has to report two. And that's because there were certain deductions that were allowed at the estate level, and it's a dollar for dollar offset. So the niece is only reporting the amount in excess of those deductions. And then the K-1 tells her where to report that. It could be interest, it could be dividends, it could be capital gains. Occasionally an estate will have a loss on something they might have sold. And in that case, the loss passes out to the beneficiary. So this can happen in estates. It can also happen in trust. So if you are a beneficiary of an estate or a trust, you want to be careful before you file your tax return to make sure you're asking that executor or that trustee if there is any K-1 reporting that is required. So be careful of that. We had a caller, Shubra, off air, who asked a question. Bought a house last year in September. Can we expect a higher tax refund from, pre-move years when we didn't have the house? Is there deductions that help with that? When you buy a house and you bought a house in September in 2015, you may or may not have a higher tax refund. It depends. If you never changed any of your withholdings, you kept everything the same, and maybe now you have a big deduction like a house with a mortgage and real estate taxes, then you may be able to itemize where in the past you might not have been able to. You fill out the Schedule A and you report if there's mortgage interest from your mortgage company. Maybe there's real estate taxes that were escrowed. Those will be on that mortgage statement as well. Or maybe you paid the real estate taxes yourself. So you put those deductions on Schedule A, and that together with other things like your charitable deductions, your state and local income tax from your wages and earnings. Maybe you have high medical expenses that may or may not be deductible. So chances are, quite often we see in new homeowners that they may have more deductions than they had in the past, and then that would benefit them on deductions. The reason it may or may not help you this year is because you did it later in the year in September. I'm not sure how big those amounts are. The other thing you're going to want to look at is the settlement sheet, because when you bought the house, you may have had to pay some of the real estate taxes at settlement that the previous owner had prepaid, and now you had to pay some of them. So you want to look at the settlement sheets on that. Okay, hope that helps. Hope you get some deductions and you get a bigger refund than you're used to getting. And just be careful going forward. Sometimes people will adjust their withholdings at work and hope, thinking they're going to get all these deductions from their house now, and then they, you know, may not time it just right. So you're in a year of transition. I'd kind of see how it goes and if it helps you. Folks, it's been great. Thank you so much for calling in tonight. I appreciate it a lot. Next week, I'm going to have the topic New Beginnings. Put your financial house in order. I figured it's springtime. We're going to talk about new beginnings. Put your financial house in order. And hopefully we'll talk about some financial planning topics. Of course, I will also be here for tax questions if people have those from time to time. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank Judy Ann for being here, taking all these calls. I want to thank Jeff being here. Love having Jeff back. And I want to remind folks to pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.